Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Oh Look a Squirrel, episode number 5. I'm Doug Cox. Very happy to be back here presenting you another episode. Occasionally, I'm going to play some archival stuff that I've recorded in the past, just because I think it's worth keeping it alive, and it's kind of nice to put this stuff back out there. In 2010, we lost the great drummer, Richie Hayward, who was mostly known for playing with the band Little Feet. And Richie spent the last while of his life living here in the Comox Valley on Vancouver Island. Very famous drummer. He played with everybody, including Joan Armatrade and Eric Clapton, Ry Cooter, James Cotton, the Doobie Brothers, Bob Dylan, Peter Frampton, Buddy Guy, Barbara Streisand, Taj Mahal, Robert Plant, Linda Ronstadt, Tom Waits, Warren Zevon, on and on. Just probably faster to read a list of who he didn't play with. And he was a drummer's drummer, one of the most influential drummers of our time, one of the nicest guys, one of the nicest musicians I ever had the opportunity to hang out with just a little bit. I produced Vancouver Island Music Fest, and Little Feet came and played to say goodbye to their friend Richie when they knew he was really ill in 2010, and Richie was on the side of the stage. Watching the band, and we all hoped he would get up, but he was very ill at that time. We didn't know if he'd have the strength. Sure enough, he stood up and he went out and he played 3 songs and lifted the entire 8,000 member audience and the band up into the clouds. It was one of the most beautiful performances I've ever seen. You can see some of it on YouTube if you just Google Richie Hayward at Vancouver Island Music Fest. And there's a beautiful article written by Tom Hawthorne about the experience as well, which I am going to post with this podcast on my website. So check that out at dougcox.org. So here we go. This is part one of an old podcast of mine called Roots Review. Part one of the Richie Hayward Show, though. I'll follow it up with part two probably next time. I hope you enjoy. Thank you. Greetings and welcome to Roots Review, talking music. I'm Doug Cox, talking to you from Vancouver Island, British Columbia, and I am absolutely thrilled to present a special show today. A few days ago, I got to hang out with Richie Hayward, one of the greatest drummers on the planet, mostly known for his contribution to the band Little Feet. He has also played with just about everybody in the music world, in the roots music world, a bunch of my favorite players anyways. So we had a lot of fun, and this interview that you're about to hear was recorded at Richie's house. So you're going to hear some movement of dishes. You're going to hear a dog come up to my microphone at one point while Richie was talking and sniff at the microphone. There's a few weird sounds, but I think it's a really special interview. We're going to start off with Dixie Chicken, perhaps the Little Feet theme song. Here's Richie Hayward.
Hey! guitar player she could play. She always liked to sing along.
To have you here. I guess we'll just start off with some sort of drum questions. And
okay.
I was wondering, first of all, I know that people think of you as sort of one of the most unique drummers around. Did you consciously develop a unique drum style? Or
well, I didn't start out thinking, no, how can I be weird?
Huh.
You know, it wasn't like that. I don't know why it, or exactly how it's different. I grew up in the Midwest, and there wasn't a lot going on musically. There was one guy to learn drums from, and took lessons from him for just like 3 months and passed him up, and so the rest of it's all self-taught.
So you didn't have any snare drum core kind of?
Well, a little bit in junior high. I was in the band, you know, and they taught me 19 rudiments.
Oh,
I
okay.
think there's 20 something now. Then I just quit the band. Didn't march well.
Okay.
And so anyway, I just kind of self-taught. I just would hear things on records that I liked and try to emulate it, and it would come out just a little bit different, I guess.
So were you a big fan of the New Orleans?
Oh yeah.
Stuff mostly, or?
Oh no, not. I mean, that kind of came a little later, but oddly enough, the stuff that I started really liking was from New Orleans too, but I didn't know it. You know, it's like. Started out with my dad had these Dixieland records, and I used to listen to them once in a while, like really whenever I could, you know.
Are there any specific tracks or drummers?
No, I was like 7, 8 years old. I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
And now that's all New Orleans music, you know, the brass jazz stuff. And then I discovered bebop and went off into that. I was 10, 11 years old, thinking of I was a bebopper. It was pretty funny.
Go, go, go.
your process to develop your style wasn't really conscious. You just played what you wanted to play.
No, I was, didn't have a style in mind. I guess that's the kind of thing that makes one. Is that, you know, you are just a result of what you experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I sought out experience of this kind of music.
You're listening to Roots Review, talking music, and I'm talking to the legendary drummer Richie Hayward today. I asked Richie if he had any jazz playing in his background.
A little bit, and then the Stones hit, and I discovered Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters and all that stuff, and jazz is hard.
I bet.
It's not as gutsy. I mean, it is gutsy, but it's not. It's not as simple and seat of the pants as blues is.
So, who were your the jazz drummers that you really?
Well, Elvin Jones is the king of them all, I think. And there's lots. There's Max Roach and Tony Williams and Roy Haynes.
And do you as a drummer see any difference between kind of blues grooves and jazz grooves? Is jazz more in front of the beat?
In front of the beat, behind the beat. That's just the way the guy plays it. Depends on the guy and the day he played it and all that.
Oh, okay.
But on top of the beat or behind the beat is a personal trait. But the complexity of jazz beats is far, far more difficult. It's more advanced.
Do you see yourself as a drummer who mostly plays on top of the beat or behind?
Little more than I should.
You're on top, mostly.
What I try to do is have the right hand a little bit on top and the snare drum just a tiny bit behind. So it creates a little bit of tension and it seems to lean back and go forward at the same time.
And when you create a drum beat, what are you listening for? Are you listening to the bass or to the keyboard?
Listening to the song.
Everything.
Not everything. And I'm trying to figure out where things should go and how it should feel and what the pattern should be and how it should transform from this one to that one and resolve and all that sort of thing.
So if, for example, one of the tunes we're thinking of is Let It Roll.
That's just balls to the walls straight
ahead. Just balls to the walls, but when you guys did the arrangement for that tune, did you sit down as a band and just everybody kind of throws their ideas in, or is there somebody
the guys that wrote the song come in and they play it for us, and we learn it.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's different with each song, too, and different with each writer. Some people come in with tapes or a recording of some kind.
The arrangement was actually there, though, by the time the band took it on?
Well, not all of it.
Oh, okay.
Not all of it, no.
Rolling down Highway 95, sailing through a hometown countryside. Move on over, stand aside, my cruise control and overdrive. Need to take my baby for a ride. Ooh, she's right.
wasn't a band. It was more of a band collaboration on the arrangements, and we played together a lot more because we were young and we didn't have distractions of wives and kids and all that. It was more of a visceral thing. It was, you know, it was kids in a band, and now we're more mature and our lives are spread out all over the country, and I'm actually spilled out into Canada. Mm-hmm. So it's like we're it's not that easy for us to just get together of an afternoon and have a play. You know? So we do most of our rehearsals at sound checks on the road.
So a song with an intricate arrangement like that then would be, it's not something that would just happen organically anymore like it used to then. You know?
Well, it still does, but it's not as pre-rehearsed. Mm-hmm. We'll go into the studio having played it a few times and then polish it up in there. We definitely work it out together, but not as much as we did in the 70s.
And everybody in the band kind of plays an equal role in terms of coming up with the arrangements and when you do get together?
No. The writers kind of have some suggestions.
Oh, okay. So when you work as a recording drummer, is your sound largely defined by mic placements and that kind of thing, or is it, do you feel like it's mostly defined by your playing?
Well, I think it's both. I think it's a drum key is the first thing. I mean, if you can get them to tune and sound good as an instrument, miking them shouldn't be that hard. But that depends. There's some engineers out there that could have trouble miking a grapefruit. Mm-hmm. But I think it's down to the way you hit them and the way you tune them. I've had different engineers on almost every record, and there seems to be some kind of commonality that comes out.
Because you've done so much recording, do you usually tell the engineer how you like your mics to be set up and that kind of
thing? No, I don't meddle with him. But when we're getting the sound, and that's when we talk about it. I'm not going to meddle with him before we even hear it.
Yeah.
He might know something completely, you know, new to me.
But you would think if they're going to hire Richie Hayward to play the drums, they're going to want your input more than just a sort of a generic studio drummer, right?
I don't know. We usually agree on the sound without having a whole lot of discussion, because the engineer is really good. He knows how to put up the mics. He knows the room. He knows how to pad the mics and the EQ and where to put it in the mix and everything. And he's got that going on in his head when he comes in, just like tuning and playing is in mine when I go in. And we kind of work together to get it on the tape.
Oh, okay.
And it's usually painless.
And do you find the approach has changed quite dramatically
now
that things are digital?
Well, there's a lot more than being digital that's changed it. You know, the way people are making the rooms now, the way they're recording, just because there's no record company funding anymore, basically. So that endless time, research time in the studio is pretty much a thing of the past, unless you have your own. So everybody has his own.
Yeah.
And they fart around at home.
Have you been sampled to the point of people taking your sound and just creating tracks with it now, or have
a
you
little bit
any?
Yeah, there was a song of a band called Tribe Called Quest that had a big hit with the intro beat from Fool Yourself.
Look out, child, you're bound to change, you can't ever stay. If you keep on singing the same old lines, you're gonna look around, baby, and find your friends out of time. Watch out, girl, the words you say that don't really fit the play. Somebody else you might talk to now knows what you say and what you mean. They don't help you stand. You might say you ain't got a heart. down and take your pride away. See how bad you need to cry, but no matter how you try, it's the same old story once again. You always hide from the one.
Review. I'm Doug Cox, doing a special interview with Richie Hayward from Little Feat, and right now you're listening to a sample version of a band called A Tribe Called Quest. They took the song you just heard, Fool Yourself, and turned it into what you're hearing right now.
Ain't no need to question the authority.
Do you still practice and you still work on your drumming?
Yes.
And
yes.
Do you think that most musicians that are at the point in their careers that you're at actually do still work on their playing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
A lot of them do, if they're going to keep growing. I mean, as I get older, I find that you know, the time between tours is not any longer, but I lose more physically in between them, so I have to maintain that a little bit to keep from having to catch up the first couple of gigs when mm-hmm. I go back out.
And you tour, I mean, until your health has taken a turn, but before then, you tour a lot, probably yeah. more than most musicians your age do, right?
Yeah, I thrive on it. I like it.
Like a two-thirds of the year, would you say? Or
no, half the year.
Half the year, yeah. Wow. That's a lot.
We were doing 100, 120 gigs a year for 18 years.
And then you did studio work.
Yeah, lots of that over the years.
And were you were based out of California
mm-hmm.
when you were doing that? Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you do studio work mostly in L.A. or did you do it all over the place?
All over the place. Mostly in L.A., but there was a bunch of London stuff and some Nashville stuff and a couple of New York things.
Did you find there to be a big difference between the different cities as far as the studio scenes go and the techniques of recording?
No.
Oh?
Not a lot.
It's basically the same.
I mean, they're using the same equipment. People are people, and they were all, you know, English-speaking, technically advanced countries. It wasn't like mm-hmm. I was going to, you know, Ethiopia or something. No offense, Ethiopia.
There's these books out called Behind the Glass where they interviewed a whole bunch of record producers, and they generally they seem to say there's a big difference between the British technique of recording and the American technique of recording. Did you ever notice that?
Well, maybe on their side of the glass there it is.
But in the playing.
But you know, the musicians in the studio, learning and playing the songs. It's down to them to record it, and what they do, I think, is pretty much merged over the years to. You know, it started out with a lot of great English innovators like Glenn Johns and Tom Dowd and all those guys, George Martin,
mm-hmm.
who really were in the inventing phase of multi-track recording, and they made a huge impact on the way we do business now. But it's been developing for 60 years in the multi-track thing, and it's pretty much, I mean, engineers are usually fairly willing to share information. And,
yeah.
And so it's grown exponentially.
Well, what do you think of the music business now? Do you think about it?
I think it's all business.
Yeah?
Yeah. And they just give us the business. I just play for the fun of it. I have to make a living with it too, but trying to understand that whole side of it is difficult for me because they keep shifting the sands and moving the goalposts and now there's no record stores anymore.
Yeah.
What the hell are we supposed to do? I mean, Amazon, everything?
Yeah. So you think it's really changed then, obviously.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it used to be grassroots mom and pops record stores in every little town, every neighborhood. You can go in and you know, there was a turntable and a headphone, and you could test drive a record if you wanted to, and mm-hmm. and everybody was. It was human. Now, you know, you can't even go into a store and touch them.
Yeah. Richie, how old are you? Do you mind me asking?
112. No, I'm 64.
64. Okay. So when the Stones, like you had said that the Stones came along at one point, you said that when you were listening to jazz. And you would have been, what, a teenager then?
Yeah,
you?
They're just a few couple years older than me.
Yeah. So that's when you started to play. I know you were in Fraternity of Man.
Yep.
And it's funny when someone looks you up in Wikipedia, the first thing that comes up is that you were on F Troop. I was thinking about if you were to write your own bio, there's probably a few things in there that wouldn't.
No, F Troop probably wouldn't make it.
I mean, that was probably one afternoon out of your.
Yeah,
life.
It was. It was one afternoon. It was a very funny day, though. It was really a funny day.
Well, the videos are all on YouTube. I don't know if you know that or not.
I haven't there. Actually seen the show since it came out. I saw it once when it came out in 1966.
And then it says you were in Fraternity of Man, which, of course, the most famous thing from that group is the song from the soundtrack to Easy Rider. Right?
Yeah, yeah, go Bogart that joint.
That's right. And did you guys become sort of cult figures because of that song being in that movie? Was that something?
Yeah, it
that
helped.
Was...
It helped a lot.
Don't Bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. Don't Bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. Roll another one. Just like the other one. You've been hanging on to it, and I sure would like a hit. Don't Bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. Don't Bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. Another one, just like the other one. That one's just about burned to the end. So come on and be a real friend. Don't Bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. That joint, my friend, pass it over to me. Everybody sing along this time.
Don't Bogart that joint, my friend, pass it over to me. Don't Bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
And you're listening to Roots Review Talkin' Music with our very special guest today, drummer extraordinaire Richie Hayward. We'll go back to the conversation with Richie now.
I'm just going to throw you some sort of questions at you now that come from various drummers, and I'm going to thank them all at the end of the show for... So one drummer friend of mine asked, who played cowbell on Fat Man in the Bathtub?
Lowell.
Lowell did? Okay. I don't know why he asked, but he did. What are you listening to these days? Is there anything new that new drummers that are really knocking you out?
These days? I've actually gotten into... This is going to surprise some people, but I've really gotten into the band Tool. They have some... very interesting music. It's different.
Thank you.
song's called Jambi, and the CD's called 10,000 Days. And that band is one of Richie Hayward's favorite new bands. You're listening to Roots Review. I'm Doug Cox, talking to you from Vancouver Island. Very special podcast today, an interview with the great drummer Richie Hayward. And we've got lots more from Richie coming up. As a matter of fact, I think this is going to turn into a two-part show because I've got so much interview left and lots more music. Today we have the great drummer Richie Hayward as an interviewee on Roots Review. And we're going to carry on with that show now. I asked Richie about a great drummer called Stanton Moore from New Orleans. This is what he had to say.
What about Stanton Moore?
Stanton's good. Good, yeah. Solid drummer.
He strikes me as someone that comes from your school of drumming. I don't know.
Oh,
if
he's
that's
a New Orleans boy, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's pretty greasy.
It's a great drummer, Stanton Moore, and a song called Visions of View. And we're going to get back to the interview with Richie Hayward now.
Do you hear yourself in younger drummers sometimes?
I don't know if... sometimes I hear something it could be, but I don't know if it's my ego trying to take blame for it or credit or whatever it is. But yeah, I hear some things. I hear it, you guys.
Do you have a favorite drum track of your own playing that you recorded?
Yeah, but they're not drum flashy stuff.
No? Like what?
Just kind of groove stuff. On the Robert Plant album, there's a few, but he named them all very strange names, and so that doesn't, the names of songs don't stick in my head because they have nothing to do with the songs.
Okay.
but that was a fun record to do.
And was that?
And that was done in London.
It was, and was that an album that was it heavily rehearsed?
Or
was
Yeah, that came together kind of like the old way that the Feet records used to come together. We'd all just get together and play, and something had happened, and we'd go, that's kind of cool, and we'd just kind of go and elaborate on that, and play that for a while, and groove on it, and turn into this album. Unusual stuff. He wanted a modern album, he said. He didn't want it zeppy. Mm-hmm. And this was 83, so that meant Simmons drums.
Oh,
did that come about, that you got the call for that? Was that a...
It was real odd. I was at home in L.A. thinking I'd never work again. And, you know, behind in the rent and everything. And then I get this call. And it's Robert in person.
Oh, so he called you personally.
That's yeah, nice. And it just blew my mind. And he said, you want to come over and play a little bit? And I said, yep. I was on the plane the next day and didn't come home for 2.5 years, 3 years.
So you toured with him for that?
I toured. Well, we went there and then we did the rest of his Principle of Moments tour, which he started with Phil Collins, and then Phil had to go and do either a Phil or a Genesis thing. So I finished that tour. He did the American part and I did the rest.
Oh, okay.
And then we did the album, and then we toured that album, and I hung out there for a while after we were done. Robert then disbanded the band and went on to do other things.
And was that after that you went on to work with Joan Armatrading?
No, Joan was before that.
Oh, it was before that.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw you with her in Winnipeg when I was in high school.
Wow. She was fun to play with.
That was a great show. That was a really, for me, it was really an inspiring show to see you guys playing with her.
Oh, thanks. It was really good music to play. And I thought the band was really good.
And you didn't record with her, did you?
We did one live album back in 79 or 78 called Steppin' Out.
Don't stand in my way, let me pass. Easy. Don't try to block, trip, or check me, baby. No counteraction gonna handicap me, baby. You know I'm traveling light, right? Yeah, 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 yeah. You're a lion in my path, in my light. Excuse me. Don't upset, don't embarrass me, baby. Don't show your body, oh buddy, don't make it. You know I'm moving on, right? Yeah, 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 yeah. You know it started out good, in love with all the world, and all of a sudden you tie me.
Joan Armatrading with the fantastic Richie Hayward on the drums there, and I'm Doug Cox. You've been listening to Roots Review, talking music, and I'd like to thank Richie once again for spending some time with me today. We're going to go to part two of this next time. I've got lots of other questions for him, including quite a bit of talk about drum technique and lots of the other folks he's played with and all that kind of stuff. So stick around, and please subscribe to my podcast, and you will hear part two next of the Richie Hayward special. You can find me at www.dougcox.org. You can find the Vancouver Island Music Fest running this July 9th to 11th on Vancouver Island with the likes of Roberta Flack and Fat Freddy's Drop, David Lindley, Dan Hicks and the Hot Licks, and a whole lot more. Joan Osborne with the Holmes Brothers, etc., etc. www.islandmusicfest.com. You never know who's going to show up at the festival. You can find our instructional DVDs at learnrootsmusic.com. And once again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time with part two of the Richie Hayward Show on Roots Review, talking music.